The Party in the Back podcast is brought to you by the store at GameOps.com, the home of game operations tools and toys like prize chutes, chuck-a-pucks, t-shirt launchers, and confetti. Make your show scream with everything you need. Available now at thestore.gameops.com.
Welcome to the Party in the Back podcast for December 2019. For 9 straight years, I'm hosting a roundtable edition of the podcast to talk about the best of GameOps.com awards. You can listen back to all those in our archives on iTunes, but the important thing is we're doing it live here tonight. This year, we shook up the roundtable again with a new voice, but we still have 4 of the best and most insightful GameOps people that you'll ever find to talk about each category, the winners, and our thoughts on each. Our panel this year includes, ladies first, Amanda Greco. She is a game operations enthusiast and game operations professional who's been with the Utah Stars, Utah Jazz, the Olympics, NBA teams like the Cleveland Cavaliers, WNBA teams, NHL teams, and random sporting events and entertainment events like the NCAA basketball tournament. She's everything in game operations. She joins us from her new home in New Jersey. Welcome, Amanda.
Hi, guys. Thanks.
Awesome. And my one-time regular podcast partner, Pat Walker, he's the president of 3Point Productions, which is a Seattle-based sports, entertainment, and events firm. They have consulting for professional and college teams. He's the one-time game operations director for the Seattle Sonics and directed events like the NBA All-Star Game in Dallas and the Carrier Classic in 2012, and probably a lot of since then, but I haven't updated your bio. Pat, welcome back to the roundtable. He joins us from Seattle.
Hey, John. Thanks for having me. I'm really happy to be back with you guys.
Awesome. And rounding out the roundtable, if you will, is our friend Ben Hill. Ben's been a prolific writer for MILB since 2005, when this cat lover became the top dog and following everything quirky and offbeat in the world of minor league baseball promotions. His popular promotional prose is must read, and everyone reads it. You can always find him at Ben's Biz online. That's the corner of sports entertainment, if you will, online, where he writes in his social media. It's all must follow stuff. Ben, I'm really thrilled to have you back on. You join us again from New York City, I believe.
You believe correctly. Yeah. Brooklyn, New York. Good to be here.
There you go. Thank you very much. And I am John Kudo, the founder of GameOps.com. My game operations career dates back to the 80s, including experience with the Minnesota Timberwolves, Nike Sports Entertainment, the Portland Fire, and the Cleveland Cavaliers, plus the last 21 years right here producing GameOps.com. I'm hosting this big fiesta right here from our world headquarters in Lakewood, Ohio. And as you listen, you can see all the relevant contact points, links, and social media on the podcast page, the Party in the Back podcast page. If you're listening on iTunes, you can check out the podcast page on GameOps.com for all those juicy extras. We are recording this live December 1st, 2019. The awards will be announced in conjunction with the podcast, and we have our winners. So let's get started. We have 7 categories. For each, I will share the criteria we judge on, note the winner or winners, and we'll go on to our esteemed panel for their thoughts. A quick summary. To make these awards, we gather notes on outstanding promotions all year long. In October and November, we make big requests to our readers for their nominations. We accept those all year long, by the way. But then we canvass a panel of industry experts for their thoughts and inputs, and we arrive at the winner through careful consideration and an examination of our criteria, and we talk on this podcast. So let's get started. Enough about me yammering on. Big thanks to our panel right up front, which is awesome this year. Our panel, not on the podcast, but our panel, the media members, touring acts, industry professionals, team personnel, the best of the best in game operations. I love the panel this year. We had great notes, and we actually had a lot more consensus than we normally had, and really fun sorting out the results. So thanks to the panel. Let's get started. The first award goes to the Best Entertainment Group. That is a performance group whose work was fresh, creative, and interesting, served as a valuable tool for their team and in their community, providing quality entertainment and additional value for fans. All sports team performances groups are eligible. We consider the quality, the uniqueness, and the marketplace value. The winner this year is the Mascot Band from the Fightin' Phils. Honorable mention goes to the Memphis Grizzlies, Grannies, and Gramps. Ben Hill, you, my friend, are a huge Mascot Band fan. Tell us why they got your vote.
Yeah, I am a Mascot Band fan. I mean, part of it is, if you want to talk, personal bias, I grew up in Pennsylvania, so I like to see Pennsylvanians win things. But beyond that, the Reading Fightin' Phils are a team that has really, created their own entertainment universe over the years, and something I've always been impressed with. Probably the best known, self-created entertainer they have is the crazy hot dog vendor, who rides an ostrich and throws hot dogs into the crowd and is basically a cottage industry unto himself. But that speaks about to the team's, overall approach to just creating this, almost absurdist, comic book universe in which they stage their games. And the Mascot Band, they crank out some real good rock and roll jams. They can do pregame, they can do postgame. And there's just something so absurd and inherently delightful in seeing a bunch of, grown mascots, playing all these different instruments that make up a garage rock band and cranking out hits like Rockin' in the Free World and just having a lot of fun along the way. So I've always enjoyed what they do. They've been doing it for a lot of years. They just add to the overall creative comic spark that is inherent to going to a Reading Fightin' Phils game, and I'm happy to see them win.
Yeah, they are tremendous, and I've seen them live. They're Sunday nights. I think this is their 19th year. We noted in the awards that there's now a copycat band. Have you seen the copycat band in Portland?
Yeah, I did, and I forget the Castaways, I believe.
Castaways,
yep. That just came to me, yeah. And like any good idea in this industry or any industry, really, if someone does it well, someone else is going to try to do it better, or at least do it well enough to get by.
That's right. Amanda Greco, you noted in your response how important it is that these performers look like they're having fun. Why is that so important to you, and who did you like this year?
It really is. I think the key to any good performance group is you have to feel like they're having the time of their lives. It makes it easier on your fan base to buy in and enjoy the performance, no matter what's going on. And my favorite this year was the 216 Sticks from the Cleveland Cavaliers. I just love that in every video, they look like they are having a blast. And in addition to that, they're playing great music and their performances are creative and they're executed well. And one thing for me with entertainment groups is sometimes I think, well, I can see this being good for maybe one or two games. And then at what point does it get a little gimmicky? And so personally, I like things that maybe you have a gimmicky thing every once in a while, but a consistent entertainment group, a good one in my book, is one that you could use all season long and not worry about people getting tired of the gimmick. And these guys are really talented. They're really fun to watch. And I just really like them.
Right on. Pat Walker, you rolled with the winners as well this year. What makes the Mascot Band so great for you?
Well, John, I mean, as we talked a lot about over the years, I'm a sucker for mascots, so they had an immediate in early with me. But I think they're unique, and they are literally characters. And I think if you're going to create an entertainment group, regardless of what type it is, whether it's a musical act, a dancing act, a mascot act, it's got to be something that creates characters and has a personality. And I think the Mascot Band definitely brings that to the table. I think they give a reason for fans to come to the game beyond just the sport being played. And again, that's one of our major goals in this industry is give fans a reason to be there, win or lose, walk away and having fun. And I think the Mascot Band, it's lighthearted. It's it really appeals to, I think, kids and adults of all ages. So definitely. It caught my eye early, did a little research into them, and I think I've got a flight booked to Reading, Pennsylvania here pretty soon.
Bring me with you.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I thought it's interesting. Ben, you mentioned a little bit about Reading. They've kind of foregone national acts for a long time, taking that money instead of spending, $3,000 to bring in an act, they instead invest that in their own groups. That's what, how they came up with this and the hot dog vendor and those kinds of things. So I think it's a philosophical thing, and I think it works for them really well. Like Amanda, the 216 sticks were my favorite here in Cleveland. I mean, I like drum lines to begin with, but they're more of a drum performance team for the Cavs. And it, just watching every performance is always, it's always a different number. It's always a, kind of a different vibe. They're doing a lot more dance movements kind of in the middle of it. So honestly, I was kind of surprised they didn't get more votes this year and a little more attention, but it does show how hard it is to break through and to make a name for yourself. Again, they have varied performances. They have a lot of talent. They're trying new things, and they have a role in game as well, doing some prompts, that kind of thing. So they got my vote, but again, our winner this year, the mascot band and the Grannies and Gramps. Anybody have a chime in about the Grannies and Gramps in Memphis? Well, don't bum rush me. All right. Hey, Ben Hill, can you tell us about the next category?
The next category, John Kudo, would be the best game promotion. What single game or series promotion was most effective and creative, serving as a tool for teams to entertain and draw more fans? Consider creativity, entertainment value, media exposure, drawing power, and execution of the operations. We also level the playing field by considering budget constraints to minor league teams, of which there are many. A promotion with the ability to positively affect the entire fan experience by touching multiple areas of marketing and presentation. For example, a military appreciation night, which positively pays tribute to the military with a camouflage hat giveaway, military ticket discount, use of military families for in-game promotions, video package of players speaking to their appreciation for military families, and a surprise reunion of a soldier and their family. You know, John Kudo, as you mentioned, you know, I do cover minor league baseball, you know, as my beat, and we've seen a lot of minor league teams win this award in the past. And I think part of that is just strength of numbers. When you have 160 teams, there's just that many more opportunities to do good things and to win. Also, on top of there being so many teams, there are so many dates, 70 games a year. So you have a very wide canvas in which to be creative, try new things. And if something maybe works on a Tuesday or Wednesday night, you can blow it out for a weekend the next year. It's probably one of the best areas in all sports, you know, for taking risks, and taking a risk begets success. Not always, but you got to take risks to figure out what works. And minor league baseball have a lot of room to take risks.
Yeah, awesome setup, Ben. Thank you very much. Our winner this year was Helen McGuckin Knight from the Charleston River Dogs. Now, Ben and I have talked about this a lot, but when a woman named, not talked about the promotion a lot, but when a woman named Helen McGuckin drove past the stadium in Charleston and gave the team 2 stars, she had no idea of the fun that would ensue. The team set out to find Helen and impress her enough to change her rating. It's fun and playful, totally unique, totally creative. Honorable mention goes to the Florida Man Night. The internet loves a good Florida Man story, which led the Jacksonville Jumbo Shrimp to honor these unique, often law-breaking persons with their own night. Ben, you noted in your reply how subjective this award is, which is totally true. How did your pick tickle your funny bone and get your vote this year?
Yeah, I mean, talking about subjective with something like a best promotion, you know, is it – What is the best promotion? I mean, and I think if you're, you know, especially working in sports, you might say, well, the promotion that drove the most revenue, that had the most sponsorable elements, that resulted in the biggest uptick of in attendance, what have you. But sometimes the best promotions are also just what was some of the most absurd / best / attention getting ideas. You know, that really gain traction for your team and that establish your team as a place where just about anything can happen. And, you know, that's what I love about Helen McGuckin Night. It is such a totally bizarre promotion. This woman, you know, who was basically running through Charleston reviewing just about anything she even literally laid her eyes on, you know, gives a 2-star review to the Charleston River Dogs and admits in a review she just drove by. So the team says, hey, Helen, we want to change that 2-star review to 5 stars. What can we do? And the answer to that was to create an entire night devoted to Helen McGuckin and making it Helen McGuckin Night and treating her as the queen of the ballpark. Asterisk, Helen, they did track her down, but then at the end of the day, She couldn't show up to the ballpark, so they had a stand-in Helen McGuckin night, a stand-in Helen McGuckin on Helen McGuckin night, which makes it all the more ridiculous. Of all the promotions I wrote about this year, I think this one got the most feedback. It was the article that people like most, and therefore the promotion that people like most, the one that caught people's attention. Did it draw a ton more people to the ballpark? I don't know about that, but was it creative and funny and speaks to a front office that is willing to take risks and therefore probably a very fun place to see a game? Yes. And this is the kind of promotion, like if you're just hanging out with friends and they don't know minor league baseball very well and you're trying to give examples of, well, these are the sort of things minor league baseball teams do. Helen McGuckin night is the one that just gets people saying like, what? That's hilarious. I never even would think of such a thing. And that's why I love it. And that's why I love minor league baseball every year. The teams that just take an idea and just do it. And at the end of the day, everyone else is like, whoa, I can't believe you did that. And, there's jealousy in that response. You want to be that creative. You want to be that unique, and you want to be that original.
That's great. Thanks, Ben. And I also, the whole time you're talking, I'm like, and this is why people love reading Ben Hill, because you have a passion for this. You know, and you know how ridiculous it is and how fun that is and how it makes you want to go to a ball game. So I thank you for that response. Amanda, you, in that little 1-2 punch of our winner and our honorable mention, I believe you had Florida Man Night as your winner. Tell us what you liked.
I did. I thought, again, it's so ridiculous that I love it. Like, and also a personal pet peeve of mine are theme nights that aren't really executed throughout. You know, it's not enough in my book to just call something, you know, teddy bear night and just put up a graphic with a teddy bear and that's it. I like a really well executed promotion where it's weaved throughout the entire game. And I feel like the Jacksonville Jumbo Shrimp did such a good job with this promotion. I believe they gave out a Florida Man bobblehead for the first 1,000 fans. And the bobblehead was like a man in jorts and he was holding like an alligator or crocodile. I can't tell the difference between the two, but that, and then he had like Crocs on and he had a jumbo shrimp tattoo on his shoulder. And then they invited the kind of the original Florida Man, a gentleman named Lane Pittman, who got national attention for holding a U.S. flag in the middle of a hurricane. And they kind of dubbed him the Florida Man. And then it kind of, you know, took off from there where all these absurd things happened and they just started calling everything the Florida Man. So I love that they invited him and then they intended to break a Florida law every single inning, which carries that theme so nicely throughout the night. And I just thought it was so ridiculous. And I love the fact that they said, hey, you know what? We know that everyone's kind of poking fun at us and poking fun at our state. So we're going to embrace it and we're going to celebrate that. Yeah, we have a little oddity here, but, you know, take it or leave it. We love it. So I just thought they did a great job with that promotion.
Yeah, own it. And I had a note there and now I lost it. But Pat Walker, I wish I had my note. Pat Walker, you had a great marketing mantra that you referenced on this award. Tell us what that was and what made the obvious choice for you following that.
Well, first of all, before I do that, John, Amanda, I just want to let you know, alligators tend to have a little wider faces, heads, and shorter, what is that, snappers, if you will, mouths.
Crocodile, I think I lost the bet. As Amanda said this, I kept thinking like Ben's gonna know the answer to this.
No, it's true.
It doesn't sound like Pat knows either.
I do. Like alligators down in the Florida area, it's one of the only places in the world you'll actually find alligators versus crocodiles everywhere else. So, yeah, just a little animal tidbit there.
Sure.
You know, thank you, plays Pat. Into that.
Yeah, definitely, Amanda. Anytime you need some animal trivia, call me. I think Ben and Amanda brought up great points here. One being, I agree with Ben that minor league baseball dominates this category and has for years, and there's a good reason to it. They are one, willing to try things that maybe other sports aren't, and two, they're willing to do something that creates a game that may also like not be fully in tune with all the normal aspects of the sport. But I think the minor league baseball realm is queued up for this category. And I also agree with Amanda about a pet peeve of, you know, when you see teams, they call it a theme night and it's not well connected and well executed all the way throughout. So I think that's an aspect of this that I definitely dial in on. But gentlemen, you're talking about just from a marketing mantra perspective, if I remember correctly, I was referencing you know, really the ability to get somebody out to the ballpark, the arena, the stadium one time and prove to them, you know, how good of an experience it can be and keep them coming back. You know, the great Pete Weinmiller in the NBA side of things, who I met here first in Seattle, you know, Pete would always talk to me about just, you know, Pat, as you're building this show, and he was in guest relations side, but he was always said at the end of the day, if we can get fans to come once and experience it, and then go home and come back, that's a win, you know, win or lose. And I think the thing that struck me about the Helen McGuckin night, first of all, I mean, what a great name, Helen McGuckin. I mean, is that a real name? I mean, if it's not, it's you know, well made. You know, like Helen was basically slamming and saying, like, kind of like, I'm driving by, I'm going to throw two stars. Like, you didn't even effort that, Helen, like, you know. And so I really thought it was cool that Charleston River Dogs were like, you know what, we're going to prove to Helen and everybody else in this process that we can create a good experience. And, you know, it's I find it funny and hilarious that she didn't actually even show up. So, I mean, her credibility on Google is now just shot, and maybe she switched to Yelp. But I really like what the Charleston River Dogs did here. And it was from my perspective something that was unique and new, and that's what I think really stood out to me in this award and why they earned it was kind of the creativity and ingenuity and inventiveness that they came in. I'm pretty sure two of those three were real words.
Well, Pat, two things. First of all, I remembered my comment from Amanda's. One of my favorite parts of Florida Man is that it was sponsored by a law firm. That's just a great sponsorship tie-in. But Pat, let me tell you why you're wrong. Helen no-showed. And yeah. I mean that. I do love this promotion. We've talked about it on the podcast earlier. I love everything about it other than that Helen no-showed. I do love that they brought somebody else in to fill in, because that's hilarious too. But I actually went with the teddy bear toss this year from no particular team. I just think that that's such a hugely impacted spectacle. People just line up ready to throw their bears. So that's the one I went with. But had Helen showed up, I'm all in. I get that. I also love Florida Man Night like Amanda did for all those same reasons. Embrace what makes you, you. So those are all fun. And what a great category to do. And I appreciate everyone's insight and ideas there. They're fun. The next category is best contest or on-field promotion. What promotion or contest is the most entertaining? For example, Chuck a Puck. It's a repeatable on-field promotion that's held in-game. We consider entertainment value, creativity, local connections, sponsorship possibilities, cost, and repeatability. The winner this year, for the third time in a row, is Beat the Freeze from the Atlanta Braves. Amanda, you know you have something when fans talk about the promotions more than the game. Is that right?
Of course. I mean, that is like Game Ops gold. And I think the goal we all have when we try to put together game presentation. And it's funny because I do have family that lives in the Atlanta area, and they obviously know what I do for a living. And they will just like talk to me nonstop about this promotion. And they're like, you've got to come to a game just to see Beat the Freeze. You know, that's the whole reason why their kids are excited to go to the game. And I think it's great the way that like celebrities have picked up and talk about that promotion. I believe I read an article about how when they're setting up to do the race, they're near the bullpen and the visiting team is like cheering on the guy, you know, the average fan that's going against Beat the Freeze. And I just think it's such a great idea because in essence, you're cheering, like you're just a normal fan and you're kind of cheering for one of you, you know, like just this normal guy or girl who's going to take on this amazing athlete. And they set it up so well because they give them such a good head start and you have a little glimmer of hope that maybe this guy is going to do it this time, and never it doesn't happen. And it's just so well executed. I think the sponsors love it because, you know, it gets the coverage of the sponsor logo as they're running past. It's just excellent. It's such a great promotion.
Yeah, it's amazing. Ben, tell us your pick and how important Beat the Freeze was into making this into another very high-level promotion.
Well, I mean, Beat the Freeze is amazing, and the Atlanta Braves and the Freeze himself never acknowledged this, but I believe they, you know, borrowed or took the overall concept from the Lake Elsinore Storm, who had Ace the fastest squirrel in the world. But it was the same concept. You're always so used to the team's character losing to the kid. Mm-hmm. to the average fan. And Lake Elsinore Storm had this squirrel, a man in a squirrel costume, who always won. And I felt like that was the spiritual antecedent to the Beat the Freeze in Atlanta. And then you see now the Freeze give way to his own progeny in the Gwinnett Braves, the AAA affiliate of the Atlanta Braves, playing in Lawrenceville, Georgia, very close to Atlanta. They this year had a massively successful Beat the Freeze offshoot called Beat the Fridge, in which the Fridge was a 300-pound man who was given a head start against his opponents because the whole joke was, you know, he was out of shape and, you know, basically too fat and out of shape to win a race. But there was a twist. He was actually super fast, so he would allow the fans to get out to a he would get the head start with everyone not thinking he was an athlete, and then he would actually come, you know, come down, chase down the fans and still win. So it was a whole new twist on Beat the Freeze. So I like how one thing begets something else, you know, that is a circle of life. That is how we propagate ourselves within this industry as well as a species. You have to keep growing and creating, otherwise you'll die and there'll be nothing left.
So fun. Pat Walker, as I encourage everyone to do, I tell them, hey, submit your promotions if you think they're the best ones. You did just that, a team that you work with and a promotion that you worked on. It didn't win, Pat, but tell us about your promotion that didn't win and what made it effective with your audience.
Yeah, John, and you're referring to the Hop a Shot competition with Buckets, with the Las Vegas Aces of the WNBA, and a competition we helped start with them and kind of designed last year, and it grew a little bit more this year. But essentially, at the end of the day, it's a rabbit on a trampoline, right in front of the basket, and contestant has 24 seconds to make a three-pointer, and the hook is there's no goaltending for rabbit. So basically, Buckets gets up on this trampoline, he comes in with his championship belt, showing off. He's kind of an edgy character, a lot of bravado. And gets up on the trampoline and just swats fans shots left and right. But the fun thing is to watch how the fans have developed over the last couple of years in timing it out and taking shots, you know, intermittently between his hops. And MGM sponsors it. It's a $500 prize that goes up by 500 each time someone doesn't win it. So I think last year we maybe got up to about $5,000 that somebody won. And I think it's a cool one too, because one, it fits the character. It fits of a rabbit. It fits the money prize of Vegas and kind of the sizzle that goes with that. And it's a fun outcome for the fans either way, because either Buckets wins and $500 goes back in the pot for the next game, or a fan wins some big money and there's a huge eruption and the wild card crew there with their hype team goes and celebrates. So it's one that's been a lot of fun, and I think we will continue to see it grow in popularity as we add some more twists and turns and kind of tradition to it.
Definitely a fun visual. I did enjoy it. The one thing is you're going up against the Freeze. You're essentially got to beat the Freeze with this. Makes it tough.
Yeah, it is. And look, I've seen a lot of contests over the years that have been entered here, and they may not win the first time around or the second time or the third time around, but if you make it good enough and stand the test of time, there might be a golden steagle in it in the end.
There you go. So, and don't be shy to submit your own ideas out there, people. Don't be shy. Pat Walker. Oh, I, you know what? I didn't weigh in here. I was with a couple of other panelists this year, the Hartford Yard Goats baby goat race, which is kids dressed up as kids, plays in the team name. It's really damn cute. It's wild fun. And I mean, what more are you looking for? Live racing is real, people. There's a reason the track and field outside the U.S. is a really popular sport. That's because live racing is fun. So look into that. If you're not doing a live race, something's wrong with you. And when there's other races that are a parody of your race, then you've really hit the big time.
We'll be back right after this. Bill Veeck said, it isn't enough for a promotion to be entertaining or even amusing. It must create conversation. We follow that conversation at the GameMops.com water cooler, Monday through Friday. Look at a moment created by a sports team and see how it got fans talking. These daily posts are a great way to kickstart some creative thinking for your own show. Look for the Water Cooler text scroll on our homepage or follow us on Twitter for the daily update.
Pat Walker, you are a well-known, you even mentioned it earlier, you're a well-known mascot supporter. So please, cue up this next category for us.
Absolutely, John. And I really appreciate you giving me this one to describe, because I do love mascots. And you know, this reward is for the best mascot whose work in was creative, enthusiastic, serves as a valuable tool for their team and in their community. We consider ability to engage and entertain fans, create fresh, innovative content, creating a multidimensional character who is effective in-game, in community, online, through social media, a lot of aspects to it. And you know, all sports team characters and college mascots are eligible for this award. And I'd say, John, you know, I really feel like this is one that, especially when you're looking at sports outside of the Big Four, but even within them, but a mascot is so critical to the identity of a team, from college and the pros. And it's the one character, if you will, that will be consistent for primarily the history of your team. You know, players come and go, fans may come and go, but you know, performers are going to come and go a little bit, but the mascot's going to be around. So I think it's a very important category.
I think you're right. The winner this year was Gritty, who is everywhere. The Philadelphia Flyers created a big, orange, goofy-looking monster last year. I will say, this is my commentary now, I'm on board now after I was pretty skeptical at first. I thought that it was more of kind of a media creation, and it was actually so bad that people thought it was good. Now I think there's some real writing behind it. There's some good character development. It's been a lot of fun. The social media is fantastic, and they're just getting so much out of it. You know, and a lot of that is led with the social media. But again, as the social media isn't just, you know, little quips. It's like they're doing content on there. It's a playful turn in the city. It's kind of a wink and a nod to the ridiculousness of their fan base. But it's all on brand in some weird way, and it's just fun as hell. So I like I said, I think I was out at first. I'm all in now. Gritty's a lot of fun, and Gritty was our winner. Ben Hill, you appreciate usually the mascots in the MIBL. That's what you see the most of, which I also appreciate. Who got your vote in 2019, and why?
Yeah, well, you know, first of all, Gritty is real. I just want to...
More Philadelphia winners.
Yeah, you know,
gosh, one... Ben and all the Pennsylvania, yeah.
Yeah, I'm just feeling good about the Keystone State. I do live... I've lived in New York for a long time, but, you know, I'm from that area. And I think I remember it might have been in this very same podcast a year ago where I was making the case for Gritty being real and not a media creation. And I'm just glad to see you come on board, Kudo. There is something... Yeah. Very real within Gritty, and Gritty has spun off into something way beyond the Philadelphia Flyers and a specific sport that is played by men on ice. You know, Gritty is a mascot of the people, and you can sort of bend him to your individual needs. But we were talking about minor league baseball, and in that category, yes, moving away from Gritty, I went for a slugger of the Portland Sea Dogs. You know, the Portland Sea Dogs, who are currently the AA affiliate of the Red Sox, Portland, Maine, not to be confused with the North Pacific Northwest Portland. You know, Slugger has been their team mascot, Slugger the Sea Dog, since the franchise inception in 1994. But in recent years, particularly over the last 2 years, Slugger has become just started to operate on a whole new level with a combination of, you know, real performing chops, dance routines, well thought out skits with props, you know, social media savvy, viral ability. He has just done throughout the last couple seasons. You can, you know, like clockwork, every month or so, every 3 weeks or so, you know, there's a new slugger routine that's going to hit the internet. First of all, it entertained, you know, all the fans at the ballpark, which is the most important thing. But then from there, he has a life of his own way beyond the usual reach of a AA Eastern League mascot. I think his routine that's the most well known is the, you know, the dirty dancing, you know, had the time of my life, where he actually gets picked up. Slugger the Sea Dog gets picked up by a grounds crew member and gets spun around. But these routines are really athletic, kind of the athleticism that we think of more with NBA mascots. just the ability to jump, you know, and run and lift things and do real high level dance moves. You don't see that as much in baseball, and to do it within the context of really well executed 90 second routines, you know, in your allotted between any context, and not only entertain the fans in the moment, but have a you know, viral afterlife. It's been really impressive what Slugger has been able to do.
Yeah, you're right. He's a minor league guy with major league talent, in the most cliched feedback I can give you on that.
But cliches are cliches for a reason, because they're usually true.
Spot on, Ben. Amanda Greco, I always trust your judgment when it comes to mascots, since you've worked with the absolute very finest mascots around. So I need to know, are you a skeptic of Gritty, or are you on board?
Man, I when you were talking, I was nodding my head about the whole Gritty thing. Like, at first I was rolling my eyes and thinking, like, oh God, like, this is such a gimmick and this is going to die out so quick. But I am completely on board. And honestly, most of it is through his social media posts, or her. I don't want to assign a gender. But the social media is so great. Like, they comment on things that are happening all over the world, all over the country, and it's always spot on, and it's so subtle. I just think that whoever is leading that program is just doing an amazing job, and something that all performers who are mascots can really learn from. They're really setting the bar right now.
Yeah, you're spot on. Pat Walker, bring us home.
Well, John, I think Amanda's point was very, very well made there.
She's good. Amanda's good. That's why we have her on.
Hey, absolutely. I don't disagree with you. I've been on the Amanda fan bandwagon. I was not a fan of Gritty at first, but I've liked Amanda out of the gates.
Thanks,
but
guys.
You know, you talked about, you know, in the header of this, we talked about the character who's effective in game, in community, online, and through social media. And you know, I thought Gritty was going to be a, you know, 1 month wonder. And it really has come out and probably been the most pop culture relevant mascot outside of sports we've ever seen. And that's saying something. I think there, you know, you've got a character that is not just doing it in game. Honestly, I don't even really know how good his performance is in game. But what I do know is that he's basically giving the Flyers a presence, you know, year round through that channel, and the character's just fun. And I think, you know, I think even, I'm not sure if any of you guys watched the show, The Masked Singer, but I think he's even got an impact on that, because the character Thingamajig kind of looks like he could be like Grizzly's long lost cousin. So, hence, I'm now admitting that I also watch like mascot TV shows. So this is getting a lot of hand. Let's go to the next category.
Amanda, tell us what's next. Save Pat.
Oh, I'll try. I mean, that was you dove deep there. The next category is the best act, the touring act or halftime show that excels in providing quality entertainment for your fans. Touring acts, halftime acts, and non-mascot performers are considered drawing power, entertainment. Oh, let me try that again. Consider drawing power, entertainment quality, cooperation of the act, ability of act to promote appearances, added media exposure for team, act innovation, and value. And acts, to me, for your night in, night out game ops are so important, because they add an extra value to that game for your fan base. And I think they kind of wake everybody up a little bit. Sometimes, you know, a season can get long and you've had 3 games in 1 week and it's the same performance groups over and over again. But you have, you know, Cameron Hughes come in, or you have any amazing halftime act come in, everyone kind of straightens up a little bit taller, and they say, okay, like, I see this energy that these people are exuding, and they want to match it. So I think they're really important, and they add a great value to not only your fan base, but also your staff that's executing the game for you.
That's a great point. I love that you noted that it kind of raises the staff up a little bit. So our winner this year, for the third year in a row, much like Beat the Freeze, is the aforementioned Cameron Hughes. Honorable mention goes to Tyler's amazing balancing act. Like Beat the Freeze, Cameron becomes a 3-time winner, and unlike the Freeze, I haven't seen anybody trying to knock off Cameron's honest charisma and act, which is probably for the best. We only need one Cameron. Thanks, Cameron. 25 years later, this dude's created a million memories, and the biggest issue might be that no one knows his name still, and he's just called that guy in the stands, which I think is an ongoing problem for Cameron. But Pat Walker, your pick was right on the cusp of honorable mention this year. Tell us who you liked and why. Do you need a reminder?
As I take myself off mute.
I thought maybe you forgot who you voted for.
I believe I voted for the Firecrackers in this category. Is that accurate?
That is 100% accurate. I can give you your quote if you'd like.
Actually, will you read it for me? Jog my memory a little.
Said, I like to see new acts in this category. While jump rope teams have been popular for a while, I like the variety and the music and the choreography from the Firecrackers.
You know, I think this is a fun act. I think we do see a lot of similar entries in this category year to year. I mean, you know, like I said, Cameron's 3-time winner. We've seen Red Panda a lot. We've seen Steve Max and Simon Says act a lot. But I've seen some groups out there with a lot of jump ropers over the year. But I think one group that does this with the Firecrackers is what they were doing was adding in and customizing their acts according to the city or the college they may be at. So I like to mix it up a little bit. Cameron's a great act, but my vote went to the Firecrackers.
Very good. And that's not a bad vote. They're around the cusp. They're one of the favorites out there. Ben Hill, you have a great story about an act this year. Tell us how an act literally got your attention and how it affected your vote this year.
Well, last year, which would have been 2018, if my notes are correct, this podcast, last year.
I'll check out.
Yeah, it does check out. In talking about this category, I said something, you know, as I often do, specific to the minor league baseball world. You know, I said it's been pretty stagnant in the world of touring performers. Haven't seen too many new ones. A lot of teams don't prioritize that in their promotional scheduled budgets. You do see, you know, the typical ones, first and foremost, the superstars. But basically the gist of it was I said I hadn't seen too many new acts in my own travels and just in covering the industry. And shortly after the podcast dropped, you know, went live, I got a DM on Twitter, a direct message on Twitter from Tyler. Tyler's amazing balancing act, and he is a young man who travels the country balancing things, you know, on his face, on his nose, on his head, really interactive with the fans, does, you know, between inning bits or halftime bits, but can also just interact in the crowd with fans. But anyway, I got a DM from Tyler, and he's like, hey Ben, I listened to the podcast, and I think we should be introduced because you don't know who I am. So I was like, okay, man. And he called me and basically just said, hey, I want you to make sure you know who I am going forward. And guess what? I know who he is for sure, because he got in touch with me and told me who he was. And the funny thing was, I had heard of him before, but I hadn't crossed paths. But like once that happened, I did notice, even though in my own travels I did not cross paths with him, I did notice him on more promotional schedules than I otherwise might have. I was watching a major league game, probably the Philadelphia Phillies, being that that's my preference, in which he was on. I believe it was the Phillies. And I was like, oh, yeah, it's Tyler. That's the guy who called me. But anyway, his act is also – you know, really fun and truly skilled. And I'm not necessarily, asking people who I'm not mentioning to call me to tell me who they are. But, if my opinion means something to you, then get in touch. I'm very malleable.
Apparently so. Thank you, Ben. Great insights as always. For me, all three that we've mentioned, Cameron, the Firecracker, and Tyler were right there. I also have a preference for acts that work the crowd as well, because I think that adds so much value. So Tyler and Cameron have an edge there. As pure halftime entertainment, the Firecrackers would probably be my first hire. And I do, Tyler, don't call me, but I do want to see Tyler live this year. I've heard so many good things and seen so much great stuff. Maybe it calls both of us, Ben, shares the schedule. We can go figure that whole thing out.
Yeah, Tyler road trip. We just have to balance our schedules.
Amanda, we got you already? No, Amanda, no. Who's your standout? Tell us.
Well, you know, I just want to say, like, Tyler, why didn't you call me? You know, like, what am I, chopped liver? Yeah, I love all acts. I really do. Like, I think that there's so many great choices out there. So, yeah, I feel the same as you do, Kudo. Like, I think any of them I would schedule if I was booking entertainment. Cameron is always going to be my favorite just because I've been in the stands as a fan when he kind of comes out, not realizing he was there. And just the reaction he gets, a really heartfelt reaction. Fans are so excited to see him. They think he's a blast. And even the people that know he's kind of a plant, they don't care. You know, I think because he just gives it his all. And when someone really puts their heart out there and gives their best, you just tend to cheer them on no matter what they're doing. So he will always get my vote. But I like all of these acts. I think they're really excellent.
That's one thing. I think I noted it on the best of page as well. One thing I really like about Cameron, I don't want to talk much more about this, but I love that he's adapted his show. And I think for a while you may have thought, hey, this guy's a plant. Once our fans know he's a plant, it's not going to work anymore. I actually think it kind of works better. And he's done these multiple game segments with the same team, like the Vegas Golden Knights and the Cleveland Cavaliers. He comes in and does like 10, 15 games in a year, and it doesn't spoil it. The fact that fans know him now in Vegas now, they spot him on the camera and they freak out because they know that guy is back. And so I actually think it's a real testament to his talent that he's figured out how to make that work in a way that I think people thought might spoil his act, that people know he's a plant.
100%, yeah.
And, man, I'm going to post your home phone number on the podcast page so Axe can get a hold of you. Our next category is best team introductions. Which team introduction is the best produced, best executed, fresh, and innovative? Consider creativity, value to fans, execution, quality of presentation, fan interaction, and attention to detail. We try to level the playing field by considering budget constraints to minor league teams. The category will consider focus primarily on the standard production. Opening night variations might be considered, but the focus is on the standard game in, game out production. And due to the category, we rely a little bit on YouTube clips. The winner this year is the Vegas Golden Knights. Honorable mention, the Tampa Bay Lightning. Pat, you had our winner. Tell us why.
I think this is a pretty clear-cut choice. We talked a bit here about the qualifications being a standard introduction versus an opening night variation and playoffs. And I think with the VGK intro, and I think this is probably an element that's pretty near to at least our podcast counterpart Amanda, given her husband Johnny had a really big hand in laying out this and how it's set up. But there's no standard there of opera. It's not like you're going to go to a regular season game, you're going to see a little intro. Like every single game is themed, is really to playoff caliber, and then they get to the playoffs. Then it just goes into beyond playoff caliber. And I think the thing I really like is that the intro each time with a VGK game is telling a story of what is then going to be take place for, 60 minutes on the ice and a few hours over the course of an arena experience. And it's styled is perfect to the marketplace and the team brand. And you expect that big flare and sizzle from Vegas, but it's not just special effects and elements like that and great graphics. It's the story behind it too. So, I think it's VGK and the Vegas Golden Knights, and they're gonna quite frankly have a challenge to almost step it up each year because they've set the bar so high. So I in my opinion, there's clear-cut winner here in this category.
Gotcha. Ben Hill, I'm going to give you the floor for a moment. You normally don't have much to say on this one, but do you have anything you want to add?
Not particularly. I do watch some of the YouTube videos of these introductions, and that's a good start. But, I really like to have the live experience whenever possible. And in the world I work in, game introductions are just not just not really happening. So, I kind of take a pass in this category because I feel like if I'm going to give an opinion, I want it to be at least 10% informed, and I feel like I'm below that 10% threshold.
Well, man, I'd be pretty quiet on this whole thing then. for me, that is. 10% informed. That's a higher bar than I go by.
I have very high standards.
I like it. So I'll give a couple quick thoughts here. I was kind of overwhelmed by this category this year. I feel like teams are throwing these massive tools and toys at it, and some of them are missing what Pat noted as the story. It's like, what's the team? What's the philosophy of the team? What's the story you're telling for that night? And I wish that was much more of the focus, a little bit less about who has the biggest budget. I mean, maybe I'm just a cranky old man, you know, stay off my lawn here. But Ben, I know that this category interests you the least, but in some ways it's like, I think you and I probably see it the same way, in that simple is better. Tell the story and engage the people live. But I digress here. I was kind of in for the Golden Knights, and I like Tampa as well. So I do like the winners this year. I think that's all I have. Amanda Greco, from New Jersey, but we know you have a huge Vegas bias, as Pat mentioned. Can you give us some context on how you thought Vegas followed up that amazing first season with the pressure to live up, kind of what Pat was talking about, with the pressure to live up to this year in and year out? How did they fare, and how did they kind of reposition it with their openers?
You know, I really think it comes down to a formula, and they figured it out pretty early, actually really early in the context of their season and the first year of their franchise. It's a formula of setting the stage for your introductions, because in hockey and basketball, those team introductions are a big moment, and there's always so much focus on them. So instead of just like doing mediocre entertainment up until that point and then blasting everybody away with this crazy open, they really set the stage. They get a party atmosphere going. I think last year I talked about how, like, when you go to a Vegas Golden Knights game, the second you enter the building, you're greeted by everyone you come in contact with. And it is an instant party. There's no like question about if you're supposed to be having fun or not. Nobody's taking this serious, just come have a good time. And they take all of their entertainers and they go around the concourse, and they have this parade where they drum and they dance, and you get to your seat and everyone is in your seat for this open because no one wants to miss it. And it's, you know, they do tweak it to each team so that the logo that the team that they're playing is there, but it's the same open. But everyone wants to be there. Everyone wants to scream "Night" in the national anthem for the Golden Knights, and it's just like this whole big social event. So, what I think they've done so well is really identified how to kind of like build the storyline up to that climax of the moment of the introduction, and letting the team just really celebrate that moment, and also continuing that energy throughout the game. And I think that each team, whether you have a big budget or not, if you could identify what your story is and what the story is you want to tell your fans when they come to a game, you got to start when the doors open. And then, like, it's like that, you know, great opening scene in an action movie. That's your team introduction. And then kind of carry the story throughout the game. But you got to build the story from the start. Just don't start it out of the clear blue nowhere.
Awesome thoughts there, Amanda, and great insight from the team that obviously have a lot to that you've been to a lot of games. You've been involved in their process. So I appreciate that inside the insight kind of thing. Let's wrap this up with the best team operations. Which team is doing the best job in their game operations and presentation? We level the playing field by considering budget constraints to minor league teams. We consider creativity, value to fans, overcoming sport and budget limitations, quality of the presentation, and attention to detail. This year, our winners were the Hartford Yard Goats and LAFC. And Amanda, we've already established you're totally in the bag for the Golden Knights, right?
Of course, yes.
So if I were to tell you that the Vegas Golden Knights were ineligible, who are you voting for?
Well, first, I don't like that answer. But then second, I would say, you know,
you're going to contest this whole thing.
I'm going to boycott the whole thing. You know, I've said this a million times, but I just am so inspired by minor league baseball in particular, for the creative, you know, energy they put into their, you know, promotional nights and the funny things that they do. I just think, you know, in another life, I want to go and just be a fly on the wall in those meetings and listen to how they come up with these ideas. And one team that I would love to sit and listen to would be the Charleston River Dogs. I think they do a really great job. And the promotions that they come up with are just so fun and unique and executed well. So they are who would get my vote.
I love it. I love that team too. I think one week this year in the at the water cooler on GameOps.com, I just dedicated a whole week because I'm like, these guys just do the best stuff. We could talk about them kind of every day at the water cooler. So I agree with you. Ben, you had one of our winners on the ballot. Talk about minor league baseball operations and how critical those are to a team's success and how your pick helped shape that success in their market.
Well, yeah, I mean, it goes without saying. I mean, operations are incredibly important in any sport, but, you know, in minor league baseball, where the product on the field is 100% not controlled by the front office, then, you know, game operations become everything because it's the only thing you can control. And I think that's where a lot of the creativity comes from. It's sort of a overcompensation for the lack of control in other areas of the operation. And, you know, I'm a big fan of the Charleston River Dogs. You know, we talked about the Jacksonville Jumbo Shrimp, big fan of them, big fan of the Reading Fightin' Phils, of course. Those are truly some of my favorites. But yeah, Hartford Yard Goats, you know, one of the winners in this category. I am also really impressed with their operation. You know, a little background on that team, and you know, some of the core front office members, you know, the Tim Restall and Mike Abramson, who are now the president and GM of the team, you know, they came from the New Britain Rockcats, which is not very far from Hartford, but was a totally different thing operationally because it was an older stadium. There was a lot less they could do. It was kind of a smaller market, less sponsorship opportunities. And then when this ballpark was built in Hartford, it became an incredibly contentious thing with the amount of public money, with a major dispute between the city and the developer. In long story short, it was the ballpark was supposed to open in 2016, and the Hartford Yard Goats in their inaugural season spent the whole season on the road. So between this is just massively negative PR. And with all that, they choose the name of the Hartford Yard Goats, and people are like, that's a clown name. That's ridiculous. This is embarrassing. You call yourself the Yard Goats. Your stadium doesn't open on time. You're wasting all this money, all these things. But the team just kind of stayed within themselves. They control what they could control, which was, you know, the entertainment. And one, they created a really funny, irreverent, you know, kind of a little bit confrontational, you know, in a good way, social media presence, even during that season when the team was on the road. So people who were kind of, you know, paying attention were like, man, this team is funny and with it. And then when the ballpark opened in 2017, then you get to see how this Yard Goats name plays into what is truly a beautiful ballpark, truly one of my favorite in Double A. And this is a team that just keeps doing things promotionally that are really interesting and taking risks and not being afraid, you know, to weather the storm that comes with taking the risks that they take. You know, I think case in point this year was heading into the 2019 season. They said, you know what, we've heard from some of our fans. We sat down with some of our fans, you know, specifically a group of mothers who have children with food allergies, specifically nut allergies. And, you know, it's so serious. They cannot come to the games. These kids can't come to the games because there's peanuts at the ballpark. And so the Hartford Yard Goats said, you know what, we're going to become the first team in all of professional baseball, in professional sports, really, to say, you know what, we're not going to have peanuts at the ballpark. And that became a talking point nationally and even internationally because peanuts are so tied into, you know, our national pastime. Buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jack. And a team like the Yard Goats is willing to say, you know, we're going to ban peanuts. We're going to have a contest to say, what are the new lyrics for Take Me Out to the Ball Game in Hartford if we're not selling peanuts? And we're going to be that inclusive that we're going to ban an iconic product in order to get people into the ballpark who otherwise would have never seen a game. And you see this thing play out in that decision that gets played out all the time in sports and in life, that all the people who are mad aren't really the ones coming to games. They just basically are angry people who just need something to be mad at. But when you see someone take a risk and implement it and say why, I think the positives are often way more than the negatives because it establishes you as someone willing to take a risk. That's just one example, but I think it speaks to why you know, operations are so important in minor league baseball and why it's good to take risks and why the Yard Goats, you know, who were birthed from very contentious and controversial beginnings are now just kind of killing it on a lot of fronts and really packing them in at the ballpark, Dunkin' Donuts Park in downtown Hartford.
And that speaks to why you are must read and the best writer in minor league baseball, that kind of background and insight. So I appreciate that, Ben. And Pat, good luck following that up. But who'd you have on the top of your field in 2019?
Yeah, I'll switch sports because I don't think I can follow that one. Nice job, Ben. Nice job. My vote here, John, was for LAFC. And I think, you know, soccer is a sport that we don't see, you know, as recognized or prevalent in when we're talking about, you know, game operations and match experience, if you will. And I had an opportunity to spend a little time around the LAFC stadium during an international friendly I was working on in September, and I was really struck by the quality of the layout of the stadium and the impact that it has on their home pitch advantage. And you know, I think when you look at it visually, you see a lot of celebrity ties there. Will Ferrell's a big face with the club, and really they've generated a really great atmosphere. That instantly, just two seasons into their tenure in MLS, you know, has vaulted to one of the tops in the league, and that's saying, you know, a lot from personally, you know, a Sounders fan, and you've seen a lot of games there and that impact, and I think LAFC is matching that, and you know, potentially exceeding it in some ways. And so I think, you know, you're also seeing what the impact of that has on the success of the play on the field, because I think it's soccer is one of those sports where the impact of the audience and it's unique in that it's more organic and self-started by a lot of the fan bases. And so the relationship between a franchise and their supporter sections and their fans is in some ways very unique amongst, you know, when compared to hockey or basketball or football or baseball. So, you know, I was struck by LAFC's polish and kind of professionalism and just their organization down with Banc California Stadium and that atmosphere. And so I definitely voted one to see, you know, expanse and some soccer impact on this award.
Yeah, good call, Pat. LAFC is the first MLS team to win this award. Make sure you check the best of GameOps.com and 2019 page. We have a fun YouTube video. It's the first person look at the fan experience there. It is really fun. It does go a long way to explain why people are raving about the experience at LAFC. I have the same bias as Ben does to minor league teams. I just love good operations, and I know it means so much more to their success than pretty much any other sport. So for me, I was a huge advocate this year of the Great Lakes Loons. Whatever they were doing, I loved, and their social media page, it was always simple to understand. It was always like, here's our promotion, here's what we're doing. They had a lot of fun, unique twists. They had Michigander Night, which was kind of fun. So I was a big advocate of them. The Jacksonville Jumbo Shrimp did a couple promotions, including one that we talked about on a previous Party in the Back podcast, where they only had two fans in the arena, in the stadium that day, which was really fun. The Charleston River Dogs and the Charlotte Checkers hockey team. I always look for what teams will be talking about or what people will talk about around the water cooler, which is, again, a big thing on GameOps.com. What's going to make people talk? And I feel like all those teams that I just mentioned, they're the ones really hitting the mark. They're creating interesting content and promotions that make people think and talk and react and pass it on the next time. We talk about Bill Veeck and what he said. It's not enough to be a part of an event, just to see an event, to see a promotion. It has to contain the element where they walk away and they talk about it. It's the word of mouth advertising that's so valuable. I think those teams that I just mentioned, they're all on brand. It's real. It's fun. It's playful. And I always love this category. It's such a great spray of teams from across the sports world that make the list and earn these votes. That actually does it for this special edition of the Party in the Back podcast covering the best of 2019 awards. I wanted to say big thanks to our great panel, Amanda Greco, Pat Walker, and Ben Hill, for sharing their thoughts here today and their great insights and wisdoms. And I want to thank the entire all the panel that voted on this for weighing in with their votes and thoughts and insights. We really got great comments. I'm really proud of the best of page this year. Make sure you check that out. We try to pull in some comments, pull in some video, and so you can really see what these people and these acts and these teams are all doing and make sense of all of it. We couldn't do that without the great insight from these people. 19 years of awards, and it's always great to take a pause back and see who's doing the best of the best. I hope you will join me again next month for the Party in the Back podcast. We'll get back to our regular format then. For Pat Walker, for Amanda Greco, for Benjamin Hill, this is John Kudo signing off.
Hey, use Twitter to discuss anything on the podcast using hashtag GameOps. Feedback, ideas, people you want on the podcast, whatever it is, use the hashtag GameOps to get our attention. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at GameOps.com. All spelled out, that's at GameOpsDotCom.